Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, where this week I am joined by Lisa Sonneborg, President of Clinical Trials at iCor Life Sciences. Lisa, you and I spoke, I think it was just earlier this week, wasn't it? And jumped on very quick, and I got the best message from you with the additional information, which simply said, excited. So. Yeah. I'm very excited to have you here. Welcome to the show. You know, in your own words, rather than me butchering it as I already have, if you can give the audience a quick overview as to, yeah, your role and who you are, that would be very helpful.
Absolutely. So I'm a clinical trial girl from the start, inside and out. Mm-hmm. And iCor Life Sciences is a unique organization in that it's an end-to-end CRO. So starting all the way with the preclinical services, so you're thinking protein expression and purification all the way through kind of animal models. And then as assets start to approach or even, you know, the clients start to think about phase one in human trials, iCor is unique in that we have the ability to basically start offering access to those services. So mm-hmm. the transition's seamless. You're always working with and can have access to both teams. Which is a relatively kind of unique thing in the clinical trial world.
I was just about to say, is that quite unique? Because, yeah, normally it's a preclinical CRO or a clinical CRO, and you're telling me it's you can try.
Yeah, so it's both. And I'm a clinical girl, so I stay on the clinical side. But the relationship with the preclinical team is wonderful because what it means is that we can collaborate and co-inform each other. Mm-hmm. So just because you did work with the preclinical side, sometimes you're with them for 8 to 10 years preclinically. You don't want to lose the expertise of the folks who helped basically service and run those models for you, but instead you want to integrate that expertise into the next step. So it's really nice because we can really merge kind of those two thought processes and scientific expertise with clinical expertise. I personally really like, I love the scientists, but I also love the idea of bringing kind of the clinical trial aspect to those clients. Mm-hmm. I think that they find it to be really helpful to have both teams on calls when we start to conceptualize projects for their asset all the way from, you know, first ideation in terms of let's start even thinking strategy. What would this look like? What geographies would it apply to? If we were going to do human clinical trials and talk about markets, where would we want to end up? Because it's all part of a picture when you're thinking of an asset.
Okay. This is the first for me. I've not come across a CRO of this Woo-hoo! Before. But look, I guess, firstly, before we get more into that, to rewind, you say that you're a clinical girl, always have been,
always.
Will be. But what's your background? I guess that a lot of people often, when I speak to them, have fallen into clinical research.
Yeah. I'm no different. I definitely fell into it, and I fell pretty hard into it. So my master's is in mental health. I was a licensed mental health counselor, so a therapist.
Right.
I had a private practice in the Central Florida area, mm-hmm. which also is a really big hub for Alzheimer's research. Uh-huh. As you can imagine, Florida is a really big state for neurodegenerative trials in general. Mm-hmm. So I was running my practice and someone had mentioned, you know, you should see if you could like do some part-time work with this Alzheimer's research group.
Yeah.
I thought, sure, why not? That sounds like a fun kind of side gig. I became what is called a psychometric rater. So I did assessments for patients with Alzheimer's while they were in clinical trials. And in a lot of ways, this is the data gathering. I mean, these are the data points that help us understand when someone has Alzheimer's, whether or not their cognition is declining, stabilizing, probably not improving. Unfortunately, we're not quite there with therapeutics, but it's a really critical role in those trials. It did not take me long to completely basically step away from the counseling and mental health side and go full-time into research. I knew within 6 months that this was like it for me.
Wow.
I was...
What was it that hooked you? So
I'll tell you what it was. And anyone who knows me is going to go, oh yeah, that makes sense. I loved doing mental health counseling, but I was a terrible mental health counselor business owner because I felt so deeply for my clients that I felt bad charging them for services. Right. And that's a really hard way to run a business. So if I had clients who were struggling, and sometimes that was financial, it was very hard for me to continue to ask them to pay. Mm. Clinical trials is something that people volunteer for. And oftentimes they're coming in and getting awesome diagnostics and FaceTime with physicians and really great cognitive testing, and they aren't paying for it. In fact, they're getting stipends for their time for being there. So like it aligned perfectly. I wanted to be with patients. I wanted to spend time with them, and I didn't have to charge them to do it. So it was like, that was my dream come true, right?
Wow,
when
win,
someone's
win.
Like, oh yeah, we're not charging them for all of these wonderful tests we're doing. I was like, done, that's it, I'm on board. So that's how I joined that group. Now, within about 2.5 years time, the poor CEO of that company, like I bothered him on a daily basis. I was like, I wanna learn about that job and that job and that job and that job. And he was wonderful. He was a real mentor, still a huge force in the business. He kind of just let me try everything. And I'd say in about 2.5 years of time at that company, I had to have tried 6+ roles. Everything from coordinating the studies, doing ratings. I did liaison work with the community, so educating other physicians about how research was important. I eventually kind of helped them strategize and open screening centers in other geographies. So I tried a little of everything. And then when that company got acquired, which happens endlessly in clinical trials, right? It's kind of like a constant medium fish getting eaten by the bigger fish. They got acquired, and within a few months' time, it wasn't the right fit for me. I knew that right off the bat. It lost kind of the family feel that was so important to me. So I looked at my husband and I was like, okay, so like I've tried a number of things in research. I think I want to open my own research site. And he was like, do you know what you're doing? And I'm like, maybe.
Where did all this curiosity come from, Lisa? Because I always, like, often when people are trying to get into it, I'm like, just get in doing anything, right?
Oh,
go and try it out. You seem to have that naturally. Where does
maybe,
that curiosity
maybe it's stupidity, James, I don't know. But I decided, like, I looked at him and I was like, listen, I know enough that I know even the parts I don't know, I'm gonna figure out, right? And I'm gonna figure it out while I do it. We moved to New York to be near family, and within about a month's time, we basically incorporated this company with very little money. We decided to forego having a wedding and took the few thousand dollars that my family had saved for me to have a wedding, instead opened a clinic. And so we opened this research clinic, and we specialized in Alzheimer's disease because that's what I knew and cared about and loved. But it did eventually grow, and it grew into NASH, and it grew into just kind of senior population and aging diseases. But it became a wonderful research clinic, and building that was kind of the start of my, I'm going to call it, entrepreneurial journey. In that I learned the things that I was not good at and where I would always find people who are better and smarter than me. And I learned the things that I love to do and figured out how to make that kind of my niche. So ended up founding that company. It got acquired in 21. And all that time I had been friends with the folks who had founded iCor, right? So they were entrepreneurs before I had ever started the clinic, but we stayed in touch. They were the types of guys who, you know, every quarter we'd get together and have a beer and talk about what it was like opening a business. So after I sold the clinic, of course, I was like, how's it going over there? We kept in touch. And then the conversation came about, let's build out the clinical side of iCor. Let's expand this, because you have the pipeline. You're doing such great work. You've got these clients that have such strong relationships with your team. We should continue to serve them throughout the clinical trial process. And that's where iCor Clinical was born.
Wow. Okay. So were iCor not doing the clinical side until you brought that
That's
in?
That's correct. Yes. So this is a relatively recent expansion within the last 6 months.
Wow.
It's been formally announced within the last 30 days or so. But we're already serving some international clients, and we're doing site selection for early phase studies. We've done some protocol design work. So we're just jumping right in and going for it. And it's been wonderful.
So that must be pretty cool, as I say, to bring that new concept from what you were doing previously into, you know, to work with people that you know and that kind of were already friends with. That must be quite cool. How does it compare to, I guess, that entrepreneurial jump initially? Because it sounds like it was quite a big one, you know, to set aside kind of money for your wedding. You know, in order to get the site up and running. Well, there's clearly a big entrepreneurial bug in you somewhere, even if you haven't thought about it before. Where on earth did this come from? You know, were your parents entrepreneurs of any kind, or is it just out of the blue?
No, I'm just kind of one of the, I mean, yes, my dad was in real estate, commercial real estate. So he always would laugh and say, like, I'm nobody's employee, or it just wouldn't work out.
Yeah.
But honestly, I think once you've worked through building and having the personal responsibility for a business, if you get through what are typically the toughest times, and sometimes it's those first few years, the key takeaway that I always have from that experience is, like, if you're willing to learn along the way and not give up, like, that's what's going to differentiate you from everyone else, right? Yeah. Everyone's going to face so many hurdles, and some of them are, like, almost catastrophic. And it seems to me that the folks who come out the other end are the ones who look at those catastrophic moments, and instead of folding or bending or breaking, right, they look at it and say, how do I manage through it, right? It's not a, this isn't a yes or no. It's not a black or white. It's just a, what is my path now? How do I adjust? So figuring out that it didn't matter what people put in front of me, that as long as I didn't give up and I found the right teammates to help me through those things, it's just about creativity and finding your way through the tough times. So the iCore guys who founded the company, I really think that our missions are aligned, which is bringing kind of that concierge feel to our clients. Mm-hmm. It was an easy integration because they know who I am. I'm a unique personality. You've already pointed that out. So they give me the flexibility to build that clinical side. But there's always, of course, that incorporation and complementing of both kind of the sides of the business that's really critical for people.
Gotcha. So it sounds like, I mean, it must have been a bit of a whirlwind since you've joined iCore.
Oh, yeah.
By the sound of things. Probably as much chaos as starting your own business. And I know all too well about that. I mean, talking about challenges, I mean, this podcast wouldn't even exist if it wasn't for business challenges at my end. So I'm well aware of that side of things. But how has that then gone? So, I mean, when you joined, like day one, what did the task look like? Because if you're now, you know, you're starting to implement things, there must have been a lot of work to get to that point. So how did it look when you first joined, like, day-to-day life?
So the first part is always thinking, like, well, what can we do and what can we do well? Because there's a lot of folks who are going to come into the space constantly and offer everything. And that's not always the solution. And what I love about the CRO world is that, not in all cases, but in a lot of cases, I'm finding that in general, many of the smaller to medium-sized CROs understand the importance of collaborating and sharing work so that we can do the things we are best at. Mm-hmm. So it's about identifying where we wanted to serve our clients and where we would reach outside to bring folks and specialists in. Because CRO services are really varied, right? Like, there's so many parts to running a trial.
Yeah.
It's huge if you try to do the whole picture. So the things where we really knew that we could excel, and a lot of this was personally things that I was like, I can do that. That's natural to me. Is a lot of site selection stuff. So helping biopharma and biotech companies identify the right sites and investigators for their study. Mm-hmm. Helping with recruitment. That's always been something that's very natural for me. And then project management. Like, these are truly core pieces of what we do. Yeah. And while we have the capabilities to bring in and link to the entire full service scope, by no means do we think we're the best at all of those. So if a client has a specific need and it's not something that I have in-house that I think I'm going to be good at, you better believe I am going to vet and find the best possible solution for them. And they think that's what happens in a lot of the smaller CROs, is that we're much more open to kind of getting creative and collaborating. And you don't always see that as the CRO size and scope scales up.
Yeah, no, I'm aware of that. And I hadn't necessarily come across that business model previously until I had a guy on the show called Andreas Boist, who's the CEO of the Association of International CROs, and it's a group group of CROs, and they each, like, so if they can't cover, you know, capacity to do a global study, they will kind of map it out and say, okay, look, you take this, and they
Who's
literally,
taking which part?
they
Absolutely. And it's so
literally
important.
share that business.
Yep. And it's especially when you're thinking globally or thinking really large studies or, pivotal or end stage studies, you want to make sure that you can provide that reach and that you, as the CRO, aren't stretching because this asset is somebody's baby, right? This is the thing they've put a lot of time, effort, and money into. And small mistakes, issues, for example, with protocol design can have ripple effects that can be. That can affect the timing of the study. It can affect the budget of the study, and sometimes to a level that actually can make or break the success of not only the study but the asset as well. And I personally feel if I'm going to look someone in the eye and tell you I'm going to do this for you, that's the responsibility I feel is like this is now going to become my baby. So I am gonna like I'm gonna mama bear this for you, and we're gonna take this together. And so I think that's kind of that unique perspective that we're trying to bring is that collaborative part, but also that we are personally invested in the success of these programs.
Sure. So I guess how is everything going by the sounds of things? The fact that you've said,
Busy.
oh, we've just announced this last week
Yeah.
about getting things running, it sounds like it's going well.
It is.
What have been, I guess, probably like
Yeah.
the biggest wins for yourself? How's that made you feel, I guess, Lisa? Because you probably
Yeah.
guys, look, I can do this, that same peace of mind piece, right? To
So,
iCore.
biggest win I think was when I was conceptualizing what we wanted to do when we had a request for business before we had even kind of started the iCORE clinical piece. We were just brainstorming, and someone's like, "Oh, well, if you're going to do that, there's a project we want you to do." I was like, "Look, we have a client. We haven't even started yet."
Wow.
So that was really exciting, and a lot of that was, as you can imagine, having worked at the site level and worked directly with sponsors. A lot of what matters to people once they've seen your work is who you are and how you interact with them and how you deliver, right? So the folks who came to us were people who had known me personally, who had taken a chance on me when I built my first business, and who, when I said, "I'm thinking of this," said, "Okay, we've got work for you." So those were the things that said, like, you know what? And I think reputation, no matter where you are in this business, is probably the most valuable thing any of us have, and how you, what type of work you do, and how you collaborate with others is forever in my mind going to be the most important. So it was really flattering that folks had remembered me and were willing to basically say, "You're doing it there? Sure, we're coming with you." So that was probably the biggest win right off the bat. And of course, we're crazy enough that as we're doing some site selection programs and processes for sponsors, we're trying to basically crank through site selection visits during the holidays, which, as you can imagine, with the way sites close down during the holidays, we're really challenging ourselves just trying to get people to these sites and beg them to please stay open. We want to do site selection visits before Christmas, so
Is
we're
that
doing
going to be one of the
our
biggest challenges then? I mean, and
stuff.
how are you coping with that? Because, yeah, I mean, these days now I work the US market, you guys don't shut down in the same way they do in the UK.
This is true.
And I used to always
For
take
better or
vacation.
worse.
I always used to take vacation over Christmas. Nowadays, I end up feeling like I'm working more than ever. So how challenging is that over this period?
The trying to ramp up while everyone is kind of trying to slow down. And what I mean by that is, like, you're right. In the US, a lot of people are working, whether they should be or not, through the holidays. I personally am a big believer in taking time during the holidays. I've got two small kids. But as you're trying to ramp up a business, it's really important to take extra steps for our clients right now. So we're going to do the very best we can, but there's limitations. If the PIs aren't at the sites, or if the critical staff can't make it happen, it's just about being flexible, honest, and transparent with our clients and making sure that they understand. And I think that's one of those things is we will always make that best effort. And I think a lot of CROs function this way, right? But there's other variables there. So it's fine. The hardest part was having to tell my kids I'm going to be gone for a few days during the holidays. I got like a lot of boos for that. But that's okay. I already prepped the husband for, if I'm missing this day, here's some fun activity. So he's ready to kind of cover for me. But I really do enjoy seeing the sights too, and also seeing different parts of the US during the holidays. There's nothing better, right, than
Yeah.
maybe seeing the different cities and how they're decorated. I love that.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like there's going to be a lot going on. I
Yes.
guess in terms of like if everything goes well, what's the business now then going to look like as we go into kind of 2024? I mean, the market has been one of the craziest markets that I've ever seen. You know, sometimes I can speak to, I'll cold call like a CEO and they may tell me, James, I need or I could need three project managers. At the same time, I may need to look for a job myself. And it's honestly been that ridiculous.
Yes.
So how is, you know, is things looking stable? How is 2024 looking for you guys?
So let me tell you, I'll tell you what the dream is, and then you'll see the, and then you can see the picture, because everyone, stable or predicting what 2024 will bring is always very hard. But I can tell you what we're going for. And what we're going for is managing our workload. So choosing the projects wisely that we know we're going to execute on, and in doing work we enjoy. And I think we're very, especially the team I'm working with right now, we're really grateful for the projects and clients we have, because the relationship match is so critical and key, and it's perfect. It's right on point. It's people who want to feel like they're working with family and friends when we work together, where we're all kind of pulling in unison towards a common goal. So what do I want for 2024? I'm going to continue to grow and build the iCORE clinical team. We're going to expand to a few additional early phase studies, and that includes with some key, I can't say it out loud yet, but you'll be reading about it in the upcoming months, some strategic international partners, so that we have the capability to serve sponsors and biotechs who are looking to enter the United States and or who need strategic access to other geographies. So we're going to be doing some really interesting collaborations internationally, but it's about filling our time with the sponsors and projects that make sense for us, and staying where we're happy and doing the right thing by our clients. So I think there's a lot of growth there, just in terms of picking and choosing, but we're busy and we're happy and we're having a really good time, and I feel very blessed to be going into the holiday season with that feeling.
Awesome. And I like that, you know, just trying to focus on the work that you like, you enjoy, and that you're good at. Because actually, I think if you end up doing that, that is where your best work comes, isn't it? If you start
That's
trying
it.
to take on anything just because you want or need the business,
Yep.
that's where things decline and that's where client expectations just end up
And
bombing.
that's also where your reputation is going to start to falter, right? If you're taking on projects that your heart's not in, or that you're not going to enjoy, everybody feels it. Your staff feels it, the client feels it. And it's doing a disservice to everybody. So we're really passionate about finding those things that speak to us, and being honest with clients. If it's not something we're going to be good at, happy to tell you who we think might be good at.
So look, what is the I guess your bread and butter type of
Yeah.
study that you enjoy, whether it's a therapeutic area, phase?
Yeah, so there's a few pieces there. So therapeutic area is very easy. Alzheimer's disease, CNS, neuro, psych, all of those kind of things fall really easily within our scope of expertise. And I
Yes,
would say
naturally, after with
grow
your
naturally
background,
for us,
right?
right? But when it comes to services specifically that can get more creative with kind of, I'm going to say, outside of just the therapeutic area, one of the things that we're getting called in for now in a few different projects is what I'm going to call help, it's on fire. So someone's running a study and something's not working. And they need someone to, this is what it is, right? Help, this piece of my trial is on fire. So we come in as the firemen and try to, first of all, calm down the chaos, do some damage control, and then not only assess what went wrong, but help put in some really specific preventative measures to try to keep that trial on the rail and get it back on budget and on time. And sometimes this is an issue with needing add-on sites, because certain sites that were selected initially just aren't performing. And sometimes it's a recruitment issue. Sometimes it's protocol design, right? If it was designed wrong and everybody's struggling, meaning your sites are simply unable to either operate it or enroll it, sometimes it's, hey, can you come take a look at this? What's not fitting? And that's a combination both of let's take our experts and understand what went wrong, but let's also communicate very openly with your sites and ask them what they're struggling with and get real and honest feedback and incorporate all of that into a kind of an amendment. So those are the types of projects right now that we're having a lot of fun with, because you can, especially, again, we're not going to take it if we don't think we can do it. But when we get these, like, you can see such incredible return on your work when you can take something that's not working and with the right strategic tweaks to the program, really get something moving forward again. And I think everyone feels so good when we see that progress.
Yeah, no, that sounds exciting. And as I say, like, you know, I love the fact of just doing the work that you are good at and doing the work that you like. I mean, it sounds like you've kind of carried through with, I mean, it's your very big personality. So I'm sure that you know that already, right?
I am.
Don't tell me you've not heard that before.
I'm just messing with you.
But, you know, have you changed personally since owning your own business? Because I'm just thinking, I'm the founder here at Huxley Morton, and I've worked elsewhere. I'm just wondering if it's different now going back into an organization. It sounds like you've got that genuine, like, you're working with friends, so it's quite unique. But have you changed at all?
Here, I'm going to tell you some honest stories, and people who are, if anyone sees this from some of these old companies, they're going to laugh. The first company that I worked in, where I was trying all those different roles and trying to learn how research went, there was a administrative assistant outside of the C-suite, and she controlled who got to go in and out. Okay. And she would always page back. Like, if you wanted to see the CEO, she'd be like, you know, so-and-so's here to see this person in the back. Yeah. And they'd say, let them in. I was there every day trying to get in the back to talk to people because I wanted to learn and bug them, and I had ideas and whatever it was. So it got to the point, I'll never forget this. One day she just buzzed and she said, most annoying employees here to see you. And he just, he buzzed back and said, let Lisa in. So here's the thing. There are very few employers who are ready to foster folks who can't sit still very well, right? Mm-hmm. I don't stay in a specific job function very well. I have trouble staying inside a box. I'm always going to want to be helping everyone, strategizing, thinking mm-hmm. of the next thing we're going to do. But that being said, iCore Life Sciences is that type of environment, right? So I think there are few companies who can foster and grow people who are as big or annoying or entrepreneurial as I am. Mm. iCore is one of those groups where they have basically said, we trust you. Let's have open and transparent communication as we grow this piece, but we know you can do this, so go for it. And that's been what's let it kind of grow and continue to just blossom even this early in the process.
Amazing stuff. Well, it sounds like you've landed on your feet with iCore.
Really.
You must be very happy. I mean, I interviewed a medical director yesterday, and he said, James, I just want you to help me find somewhere I'm working with humans again. Like, I've been, you know, too many straight-faced individuals at board level. It's just like, I didn't enjoy going to work. I was just like, it's almost sad that someone has to list that as a requirement. And it sounds like you're at the completely opposite end of the scale. And it's, you know, it's good to see, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the way that I feel about my work probably reflects in the fact that, like, I love getting to my computer in the morning and I'm just starting to type, like, you've seen my messages. There's a lot of exclamations. There's a lot of excitement in how I'm communicating with people, because that's where we're at. We're very clear about it. And I think seeing that in the team get reflected back to me and the celebrating with them as we're growing is super exciting for all of us.
Mm. Cool. Well, it sounds like, yeah, as I say, exciting times for you, exciting times for iCore. Look, I won't ask you for predictions. Like, we've kind of covered that for 2024. It sounds like we should stay tuned. Follow yourself on perhaps LinkedIn as well as iCore, and perhaps look at getting you back on the show at some point down the line
big news coming. So hold tight as we do some announcements here in the next few months. Some big things coming for iCore.
Definitely will do. But look, before I let you jump off and enjoy the rest of your day stateside, we always close the show with a quick fire questions round. So I'll try and roll straight into these with
I'll try to be quick. Here we go.
I'm thinking I probably know the answers just having listened to you already to some of them, but like, what is the one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self if we talk kind of work environment?
If we're talking work environment, in general, though, and I'm going to say this across the board, don't worry so much and have fun as you do it, right? First time I ever started a business, I worried a lot about what was the outcome going to be? What's it going to be in 5 years? What's it going to be in 3 years? And the concept we discussed of just not giving up was really what was key. The worry did me no good whatsoever. So that's what I would say is don't worry so much, just don't give up.
Awesome. I like that. Although I sometimes need to remember that myself. It's hard to acknowledge.
It's hard. It's very hard. When you're running your own business and it's all on your shoulders.
It's a killer. I never give up, but also I do sometimes sit there and worry. So I'll remember that one myself. The next question is, you know, whether you have a number one book or resource that you would recommend for our audience. Doesn't have to be work-related, clinical trial, it can be anything.
The number one thing that has, in my life in general, helped me be successful at any given time is finding people who've done it before me. And really the answer there is mentors, right? People who are collaborative, who are willing to talk to you. And sometimes talking is just encouraging, right? And saying like, this is hard, but don't give up. That can be the critical moment you need to move forward. So I would say it's finding those folks who've successfully done it and asking and identifying mentors to work with.
Definitely. It's almost like a cheat sheet, isn't it? It's like, thanks very much. You've been there, done it. Let me know where I'm going wrong.
That's what you need, though. And you also need to know that they went through the hard parts, too. And look at, they did it, too. Like, it's not going to break you. Don't give up.
Awesome. Well, you mentioned a moment ago, again, like you're going to be building out kind of the team. I don't know if I've given you a heads up on any question like this, but what are the top three qualities or values that you personally look for or value most when actually putting together a team? You've been there before for yourself.
And this is my favorite part of anything I do is the team building piece. I think anyone who's worked with me, like I would bet money you could ask them and they'd say like, yeah, that girl's way into hanging out with the people she works with. So I think if there's things that are critical to me about building that team, the first would be people who align with the mission and the purpose of what we're doing. So it's people who share that purpose. Mm-hmm. So this isn't uncommon, but you can imagine when I was building an Alzheimer's clinic, there were people who had a passion for curing that disease and for those patients, and they were awesome. So it's finding those people who align with what you're doing. I would say the second thing is in general, when you're building cohesion, it's not being afraid to be personal with the people you work with. Like you said, I'm very open with folks, right? Like that's just who I am. And I want people to be able to tell me if they're struggling, if they're crushing it and killing it, and we want to celebrate that together. I want people to feel comfortable being themselves in that team, because I think that fosters growth in a lot of ways as teammates and personally within that kind of position. Yeah. And then I would say the last thing that I would try to grow in the team, and I don't know that it's something that you necessarily could interview for, but something that always is important to me is celebrating every single win that we have, even if it has no impact on the bottom line, right? Like this may not make you any money, but that win could be critical for your team. It might be building a new process and it took you a long time to figure out. It might be one task that one person struggled with and they'd never been able to get through before and they got it. And like, we're going to celebrate like you won the lottery. So I think celebrating wins, no matter how big or small, is kind of critical for that team building. So those would be my three. It's people with a mission. It's not being afraid to be personal. And it's that celebration of every piece of success.
I love that last one. I've not had that one from anyone else previously out of
really
the shows.
Well, I'm going to tell you.
It's awesome because it helps with that persistence piece, I think.
It does. We had a saying in the clinic, and I'm not kidding you. You would hear people cheering it from like across the hall or down the hall, sometimes even in a room with a patient. It could be the smallest thing, but if it was a challenge for them, you would hear for someone else in the office and be like, you're doing it. So like people would hear this happening and I'd be like, what happened? They're like, they fixed the copier machine. I'm like, yes, you're doing it. But everyone would do this all day long. And like, finally it got to the point where we actually had a giant poster on the wall. I'm talking like they bought
this for Christmas
and it just said, you're doing it. So it's that celebration of the feeling of accomplishment, even in the everyday challenges.
I like that organic culture that is where it's born. It's not just branded onto people. I love that. It sounds like you're a very personal individual by the sounds of things. But what do you like to do outside of work to relax and enjoy yourself? You mentioned a couple of kids, but
I've got kids. So as anyone with kids knows, that takes up like all of my time. But one of the things that my family's really into is rock climbing. I have a 6-year-old who, for whatever reason, hates team sports, but loves rock climbing. So once a week as a family, we go out, we even pack lunch. We go to the rock climbing gym and we spend all day there. And I think it's just a fun time to be together. We're all challenging ourselves and then we're cheering each other on. So that's kind of like our hobby as a family. And it's one of my favorite things to do.
Are you shouting, you're doing it?
I have done that many times. And in fact, the first time my daughter ever got to the top of the rock climbing wall, I kid you not, I had people, like I was getting people from around that we did not know to come cheer for her. I was like, this is her first time, so start clapping.
Awesome stuff. That is absolutely brilliant. And look, final question, Lisa, a bit of a deeper one really, but look, what is your number one golden rule for both life and business?
Do it with heart. For everything I do, if I am not doing it from a place of caring for others, then there's no point in me doing it. I think especially in clinical trials, there's a lot of room for people to lose sight of what matters.
Mm-hmm.
And I came into this industry as a clinician and I will leave this industry as a clinician, and the people and the purpose will always be number one to me. So that's it.
Amazing stuff. Well, look, can't thank you enough for jumping on at such short notice to record with me here. Look, for anyone that wants to follow you, and as it sounds like there's going to be some big news coming soon, what's the iCor website? What's the best way to follow you? The business?
iCorLifeSciences.com, or obviously, as you can imagine, we're on all the social media. So keep an eye out because press releases hit and we'll be boosting those for everybody to see.
Awesome stuff. Well, look, Lisa, absolute pleasure having you on the show. No doubt I will also keep in touch.
That sounds great, James. It was wonderful talking to you.